Okay, next we have paper 6.1E, also on income taxes.
Okay, paper 6. Take it away.
Agenda paper 6 is to finalize the tentative agenda decision with regard to the calculation of a deferred tax as a consequence of the internal reorganization of an entity. The issue relates to a circumstance where a parent entity transfers a group of assets, including the related goodwill, to its subsidiary, but for tax purpose, the tax goodwill is not transferred to the subsidiary. The question relates to the consolidated financial statements of the parent company. We received 4 comment letters, and all of the letters agreed with the committee's decision. However, one comment letter disagreed one of the rationales in the tentative agenda decision. We dealt with this comment in point C of step analysis in this paper. The comment letter said that the reference to paragraph 11 of IS 12 is not appropriate because there are differing views over how to interpret that paragraph. It said that the tentative agenda decision, by referring to paragraph 11 of IS 12, implies that a single asset can have 2 carrying amounts. It, however, pointed out that there is an opposing view, that is, if there is one asset which is recorded in books of 2 different entities, one for accounting and another for tax purposes, then such asset would have only 1 carrying amount in the consolidated financial statements. So we suggested deleting the reference to paragraph 11 of IS 12 from the wording. We think that the reference to paragraph 11 in the tentative agenda decision does not mean that a single asset can have 2 carrying amounts. We think that in the submitter's case, the carrying amount of the accounting goodwill was allocated to different entities, which happens to be 0 in the parent company. In this sense, we think that an asset would have 1 total carrying amount in the consolidated group. We therefore think that it is not necessary to reflect the suggestion of the comment letter. Points A, B, D, and E in the step analysis relate to the clarification of wording. We reflected point A, which is to make additional reference to the term consolidated financial statements, and point D to specify the implication of the agenda decision, including one of the suggestions made by point E to mention the reference to offsetting requirements of IS 12. However, we did not reflect point B and one of the 2 suggestions made by point E. With regard to point B, one comment letter noted that if the parent company is able to transfer tax losses to its subsidiary via group relief, the analysis in the tentative agenda decision would be different. So it proposed to add a statement that the parent company is not able to transfer tax losses to the subsidiary via group relief. We note that even if there is group relief, each entity in the consolidated group would calculate its tax amount separately. So we think that group relief would not affect deferred tax amount that are to be recognized in the financial statements, and therefore it is not necessary to reflect the comment. With regard to point E, one comment letter suggested deleting the reference to paragraph 24 of IS 12, which relates to deductible temporary difference, because they think that initial recognition exemption in that paragraph is not relevant to the temporary difference in the parent company. We agree that paragraph 12 would not relate to the parent company, but we note that it can relate to the subsidiary because the transferred accounting goodwill can create either taxable temporary difference or deductible difference depending on the tax base of the transferred goodwill in the subsidiary. So we have modified the wording reflecting some of the comments, and we recommend that the committee finalize its decision not to add this issue to its agenda. Thank you.
Comments?
Laurent, you're shaking your head. Does that mean you disagree or you have no comments?
I have no comments.
Okay.
Happy.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in general agreement, although I do think the addition of the last paragraph, I think might be problematic. I mean, it's trying to speculate on what type of an effect an intercompany transfer might have in the consolidated financial statements, I think is fraught with danger, because, I mean, we've identified that it would have no effect if there is no effect on the tax base of the assets or liabilities, the tax rate applicable to the recovery or the recoverability of any related deferred tax assets and offsetting requirements. There might be a change in the nature of the tax, the character. I mean, there's a whole lot of things that, multitude of things, because intergroup transactions may be across jurisdictions, they may give rise to the asset moving into a different type of tax characterization. So I think trying to say that it typically would not give rise to any effect except for is not an advisable wording.
So you'd say just take the paragraph out. The paragraph is a sentence. Really long sentence.
I shared John's concern. An intergroup sale of inventory is a kind of textbook or trading room example of where there can be or is an effect on tax. So I think this paragraph could be misconstrued, or it's a true statement, but could be misconstrued so you can generally ignore intergroup asset transfers, which is not the case. So maybe we could just, I could support removing it or support just slightly nuancing the words to say that the committee noted that transferring assets would affect the consolidated financial statements in terms of recognition, etc., only when there is an effect.
In some circumstances, or
yes, along those lines.
Reinhardt and then Luca.
The in terms of the draft agenda decision, the one comment in particular that I had is the I'm not sure which paragraph it is. I think it's the second paragraph after the bullets, or the third paragraph, where it says the interpretation committee also noted that in calculating the deferred tax amount for the consolidated statements, the amount used as a carrying amount for the asset or liability is the amount included in the consolidated finance statements. And this gets back to the question as to whether there's one or two carrying amounts, because I think some could read that sentence to say, for example, if H had goodwill of $1,000 and that $1,000 gets pushed down, if you will, transferred to subsidiary S, and so H only has tax basis, S has no tax basis, that for purposes of calculating the deferred taxes, you should use $1,000 for both H and S, which I don't think is the right, personally, I don't think is the right way to look at it. You look at what is reflected in the standalone financial statements as the carrying value to compare to the tax base, and then do the deferred taxes to roll up on consolidation. So as I say, this wording here, I think is confusing, perhaps we could even either clarify it, or I'm not sure whether we need it in the first place.
Now, you're talking about a paragraph that hasn't changed, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Have anybody else? Luca.
I share the Andrew comments and the John comments regarding the last part of the. Yes, the new paragraph that has been included in the agenda paper. I think that I'm a little bit struggled, because it seems that it could be misunderstood, and in my opinion, we are seeing say something that is more an interpretation rather than something that is more compliant with an agenda decision. So I'm not very happy with the last thing. Inclusion of this paragraph in the agenda paper.
Okay, we've got three schools of thought. First school of thought, which I'll call the Laurent's school of thought, is that the addition is good, fine, subject to limited reorder. Second school of thought, which I'm not sure who I'd attribute it to, is we shouldn't have put that in and we should leave it out. Third school of thought is if you're going to venture into that territory, you do so at your peril. And that therefore we ought to leave the paragraph in, but add some qualifying language, which I think Andrew had broached. So I think that covers what I heard around the table. So we'll just, I'd like a show of hands, first preference. What your first preference is your first preference to leave the addition untouched? Okay. Second question. Is your first preference what I'll call the Andrew approach, which is to leave the paragraph in but to add some qualifying language to it? How many is, for whom is that your first preference?
Six.
Okay.
Six out of 13.
That's 6 out of 13. For whom is it your first preference, excuse me, to take it out?
Six out of 13 again.
Who didn't vote?
Me. I'm voting for the first one.
You voted
She doesn't want to be accused of breaking the tie.
She just did, though. Okay.
No, I didn't think about that.
What was the first one? The first one was
just keep it in,
subject to qualifying language.
Just keep it in.
To leave it in pretty much untouched. Who would object to doing that? To leaving it in. For whom is that an untenable decision? To leave it in as is.
No,
I asked for first preferences, so now I'm saying if okay, not enough objections. So. My first question was a vote on first preferences.
Right, we had one that wanted to leave it untouched. Then you asked two.
I had seven who wanted to leave it untouched.
No. One.
Okay, now let me restate that. The first question, first preference for leaving it untouched. I thought I got no votes for that.
Right, and then Sandy said she had that. Sandy said that was
Okay, the second question is first preference for leaving it in but reworking it to add some qualifying language, which was Andrew's proposal. For how many is that your first preference?
That should be six.
Six again.
Six. Okay. How many, if we went that route, would object? Or let me restate it. For how many is that acceptable as a decision? So it's not your first preference, but you could live with it. How many would take that?
Nine, 10, 11, 12.
Dave Tweedy made this look a whole lot simpler when he did this. Okay, that's what we'll do then.